Give me a beat. Thank you for pushing play. You are listening to the Red Ray is Fundamental podcast, episode 40. It's a new year. Yes, it is. No one really cares about the guy on the bottom. No one really cares about the guy beneath. And everybody wants to be down with the dude on top of the stairs. Top of the stairs. Cause no one really cares about the guy on the bottom. No one really cares about the guy beneath. And everybody wants to be down with the dude on top of the stairs. Top of the stairs. Little brother, look around. What's up, Internet? This is the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast, episode 40, recorded on January 11th, 2016, brought to you by the Happy Hour Network and RayRay.net. I am your sexy party host, Ray Ray. If you have never listened to this podcast before, as most of you know, I'm an NBA online writer slash blogger, so most of this podcast will pertain to NBA talk. But sometimes I go off the rails, I'll talk about other sports, wrestling, internet memes, whatever. I will talk about whatever the heck I want, or whatever is hot out on the streets, basically. And sometimes I will have a couple of regular features. Sometimes I talk to my favorite gals, known as the Gal Pal Squad, and we talk about whatever. And I also have an old school segment with my buddy EJ Christian, where we talk about nostalgic stuff from the 80s, 90s, 2000s. And I can't even believe that 2000 is nostalgic now. My gosh, where did the time go? Anyway, for this episode, we talked to the very first guest of this podcast, which happened last year around this time. His name is Matt Moore. He's from CBSSports.com, founder of Higher Paroxysm, and he is one of the best NBA writers out there right now. So we're going to talk to him right about now, along with my co-host, Adam Jacoby. So here it is. Scratch. Ray Ray is Fundamental, episode 40. Should be 41, but we botched one a couple of weeks ago. But yeah, so the first of the year. Joining me as always, my usual co-host, Adam Jacoby, greatest storyteller in the world. What's up?
Not a whole lot, man. Just enjoying a coffee drink. How about you?
I don't drink coffee.
Why not?
I just don't like the taste. Like, I like the smell of it. I just don't like the taste. I don't know. It's just weird to me.
You know, people who think else doesn't drink coffee that they just announced today is Tom Brady. Said he didn't.
Yeah.
Never drank the coffee.
I read that. Yeah. So what does that make
you? I think it makes you the backup quarterback for the New England Patriots.
Yeah, and then when I go somewhere else, I'm going to suck, right?
Yeah, exactly. But you'll still get paid to do it.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. So, our guest, I'm not sure if he drinks coffee, but he is, you know, one of the best NBA writers out there from CBS Sports for the second time on my podcast, Matt Moore. What's up?
I still dispute this is the second time. I'm sure I've been on this more than that. I do not believe you're right. I do not agree with this assessment. I do, however, love coffee. I love coffee very, very much. I liked it in college. I kind of got away from it. My wife used to work at Starbucks, and so she's a barista. Oh. So she's really into coffee, and now I'm like a fiend. I am just absolutely obsessed with it.
How many cups a day?
Let's see. On like a normal day, I'll have just 3 cups. But like if it gets rough, I'll go up to like 5 cups of coffee.
Wow.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is like the least surprising news about Matt Moore ever, that you like coffee. Anybody who's ever read his Twitter feed would know that he's very caffeinated usually.
I don't know. I mean, I operate without coffee, so, I mean, who knows, right? Like, it could be a surprise that he doesn't drink coffee.
Harper doesn't either. Harper doesn't do caffeine. So, he's...
See, there you go. See?
I however, do definitely need to stay... Like, I'm actually really bad because my morning routine is a cup of coffee and a Red Bull at once, which everyone's just like, why...
Wow.
And I'm like,
yeah, wow.
Well, okay, I have it, and then, like, I have a cup of coffee to kind of wake up, and then the Red Bull for energy, and then, like, I go work out, and, like, that's, like, the tie-in, so.
Okay.
I don't live healthy. Well, I mean, I live healthier now. Like, I drink soy milk, and, do you drink it black, Jacoby?
Yeah, usually. Or I get an espresso, type of jam, like a latte situation.
Yeah, see, like, I used to drink it black, and it's too hard on my stomach now that I've gotten older, but my wife turned me on to using soy milk as a creamer. It's amazing. So good.
Hmm. I have no idea about all this coffee talk. I really don't. So I'm just like, what? Black
it's
coffee?
Good, it's a good what? Discussion. You should just assume.
Okay. I assume it's a good discussion then. Can we talk should we talk basketball now or should we not? What's up?
What's that?
See, my plan actually was to talk about Boris Diaw for like 30 minutes, if that's okay with you.
Well, he drinks coffee, so I'm in.
Yeah, so Boris Diaw is very interesting. Like, there was basically like a couple days ago where we just kept talking about Boris Diaw for like an hour or two on Twitter. Mm-hmm. All these stories about him and the latest being like, what was up with that, him doing practice with a painting of him drinking tea, that famous picture of him drinking tea. So,
was it tea or was it wine?
Was it wine? Sorry. Yeah. It was wine, sorry. Cause I'm getting confused with like tea time or whatever they call them nowadays in San Antonio, so. But basically, Boris Diaw just a gem. Just awesome.
He's great. I mean, he's one of the most interesting guys in the league, I think. I think his career arc is also fascinating. Like, he shows up in Phoenix, and no one really knows that much about him from Atlanta, and then, and he, you know, he winds up really blossoming there, and he's a super versatile guy. And then he becomes kind of the overweight dude in Charlotte, whose career was basically over, and San Antonio very quietly is like, yeah, we'll pick up Boris Diaw, and people made fun of the move at the time. People were like, yeah, that's really going to turn the Spurs around. Okay. And I was like, well, they got a really good track record with this. And Diaw is really talented. And, you know, since then, he's been obviously a key member to that franchise and that team. And he's one of the most interesting guys on the squad. He's very funny. Like, he's one of the most enjoyable dudes in the NBA. There's no downside, I don't think, to Boris Diaw.
Yeah, he won Most Improved Player his first year in Phoenix, right?
Yeah,
and then he got traded to Charlotte, and then he basically became an afterthought. It's like, oh, he's overweight. Like no one wants this guy anymore. And then yeah, you're right. It was an under the radar move by San Antonio, and here he is. Like he basically beat the Thunder in the conference finals with all that scoring. Oh my God, it's like he was amazing there. And, amazing that year, really.
And you know, in the 2013 finals. One of the biggest reasons that the Spurs almost knocked off the Heat was because Boris Diaw was guarding LeBron James, which just doesn't make any sense on the surface. Like,
right. Think about the sentence you just said.
It's like, oh, yeah, well, no, we put this walrus into a cage with a tiger, and the tiger was just like, couldn't do anything. The walrus just shut him down. He really is the walrus. Also, like, if there was a Beatles song for Boris Diaw, it would definitely be I'm the Walrus.
Yeah. And just the way the San Antonio offense moves through him is a joy to see. Like, whenever you see those, Vine or Twitter videos for the ones that last more than 6 seconds with just the crazy ball movement, odds are about 90% that Boris Diaw is heavily involved in that play. You know, so it's and it was a virtuoso performance the second time they played the Heat in the 2014 finals. Just the way I mean, there was nothing Miami could do when the San Antonio offense was operating the way it was, and he was a big part of that. It's amazing.
You know, the funny thing is that when they did the that 20-second clip where the Spurs were passing the ball around, which ended up with David West with a layup. Manu Ginobili made fun of Boris Diaw for just being a decoy. He wasn't even involved in that play. But I just found it hilarious that they would pass the ball around. I don't know who they were playing at that time, but I know Dave West with the layup. But they passed it around with 4 Spurs, and Boris Diaw was the only Spur that was not involved. But I thought that was funny.
Yeah. It was the Rockets, right?
I think so.
I can't even keep track.
Yeah. I just know that the Spurs are just incredible right now. So who's better right now, you think, Matt? Spurs or Warriors?
The Warriors. I think all the talk is conceptual. I think that the Spurs can beat the Warriors. Can is different than will. The Warriors have shooting, which kind of negates everything that the Spurs can do defensively. Like, we'll see what happens when Kawhi's on Curry, but if the Warriors can find the screen mechanism mechanism, and they are really good at inventing screen mechanisms that can peel Kawhi off and get space. Like, that's the thing. The Warriors play a beautiful brand of basketball. They move the ball around. They're exceptional defensively. They play fast. They're slinging it around. They're always looking for the open guy. But a lot of it also is they just are able to make incredible shots when guarded. Like, they just can launch from anywhere, and everything goes in. And it's not just Curry and Clay. Like, Andre Iguodala is somehow shooting ridiculously high from three-point range. Like, Draymond Green can't miss. Like, everyone makes shots on that team. And when you have a team that can do that, I don't really know, you know, the Spurs, I'll put it this way. The Spurs play about as well as you can as human beings. Unfortunately, that is not the same sport as what the Warriors play.
Adam, what are your thoughts about this one?
Well, here's the thing. Everything that Matt said is true. But I don't think that you're factoring in the Boban enough.
True.
Like what?
There is the Boban.
He's like, no, he's 7 foot.
He's
7 foot three.
And
yeah, he's 7'3", like, and they're gonna put him in. They're gonna put him in high pick and roll over and over and over and over.
Why not?
Yeah,
but he's the most efficient player in NBA history. I mean, his career PER is 31.4. I mean, what, you can't stop that. And like, they've even shown clips of him just burying corner three after corner three in practice. Like, he's automatic. Once they unleash the Boban in the playoffs, it's all over.
It's going to be really funny when it's late May and the Spurs are down like 2-1 or 3-2, and it's like the second quarter, and Spurs fans are just like, why won't Popovich go to Boban? Like, why won't he do this? Like, why doesn't he see that this will change everything? And it's like, because he has no experience and can't play versus this team who's fast. Like, you can't put him out there at all. No, but you gotta do it. He'll solve everything.
This first fan base is so interesting. What do you think about LaMarcus Aldridge so far?
He's been better the last couple of weeks. I think it's been notable that they sold him on the idea of you're gonna get all these touches and get all these plays, and that hasn't really been what's been going on. Like, Kawhi's their guy, you know? Like, Kawhi's the guy that they're getting offense for, and LaMarcus has just, he's been more efficient, but he's just kind of there. You know, when you look at the Spurs, the storylines for the Spurs are their defense, Kawhi, how well Tony's playing, how well Manu's playing, at his age, and, you know, their versatility. The story has not been at any point, wow, LaMarcus Aldridge. And that's not really what he signed up for, but as long as he's cool with it, it's great.
Yeah, I mean, he's been playing better defensively as well, right? Like, that defense has been incredible the entire team.
Yeah, he's been better than I thought he would be. I thought he would really struggle, and it's been great.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. You know, when people were thinking, oh, the Spurs, you know, they're reloaded, the narrative coming into the season wasn't, oh, because Kawhi's going to go supernova. It's, you know, oh, they're going to go bananas now that they have LaMarcus. And it's not like, I mean, yeah, you're right. I can't even remember the last time that he, you know, I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, he hasn't scored more than 26 points in any game for the Spurs. So he hasn't had a single, like, huge breakout type of performance. And it's not like he's not gifted enough scoring the basketball or anything like that. But, you know, one of the things that you appreciate most about the Spurs is that they, you know, they have the sort of versatility, and they're smart enough to you know, use their best players as much as possible. And so, you know, if Kawhi were just having a repeat of last year, which was still pretty good, I think that we would see more of LaMarcus in a future role. But Pop isn't stupid, and he sees, you know, a really, really great superstar season happening right now. And, you know, and it's also a whole lot easier to sell Aldridge on his, I mean, we'll say number two offensive, you know, weapon. It's easier to sell him on that role when you're knocking on the door of, you know, first place in the West. like, what are they, 32-6 this year? So, that all of the winning makes all of that adjustment a whole lot easier.
So these are the numbers that blow me away about San Antonio and Kawhi in particular. On Synergy Sports, in spot-up plays, Kawhi Leonard in points per possession is in the 98th percentile. As a pick-and-roll shooting as a ball handler, he's in the 85th percentile. In transition, 89th. In post-up, 93rd. In isolation, 83rd. In handoffs, 80. Off-screen, 79%. In the 99th percentile overall in offense this season. That is incredible for a guy that came in as like a defensive specialist.
Right. Like, he was picked in the middle of the first round. Mm-hmm. Like, no one saw this coming from Kawhi Leonard.
Well, no one saw this coming. I knew he'd be a really great player, and I knew he had a chance. Like, I was shocked he fell. I didn't understand that at all. Like, you watch him at San Diego State, and it was just clear. Like, he's so versatile. There's so much stuff that he can do. Mm-hmm. It also just kind of shows you how much the league has evolved, because now, you know, versatility is the thing above everything else. You know, it's either you need to be able to shoot the absolute lights out, or you need to be able to do everything else. And it's shows you, like, you can add shooting to that. Him being able to become this good of a shooter is really impressive, because it's very difficult.
Right. Yeah.
So, have you seen...
Go ahead.
Maybe, you know, maybe I've just noticed it more than I've noticed it before, but doesn't it seem like there are more players who are making substantial leaps in their shooting ability these past few years than, let's say, 10 years ago? Like, I don't remember the NBA being a league where you could get good at shooting. You either, you know, you came in good, or you were, you know, just sticking to defense. Am I just totally misremembering that?
No. And it's something I've talked to players about. I keep asking them, and I can't get anything out of them. Because I keep asking them, this is what confuses me, is what you have now are teams that will get in rhythm shooting, and guys that couldn't shoot somewhere else go to this team, and now they can shoot. It's not just happening with the Warriors, though that's a great example when you look at Andre Iguodala, who has never been able to shoot very effectively or efficiently. But like Brandon Rush, who has great shooting talent, but still, like, was hanging on for dear life, is like starting for the Warriors. And it works. Like, everyone's good for them. But then also, like, Charlotte. Like, Spencer Hawes has never been really efficient shooter. He's shooting incredibly well. Jeremy Lin, shooting incredibly well. Like, these teams get in rhythms, and it lifts everybody else up. And I can't get an NBA player to describe to me why that phenomenon is. I ask, like, well, we added this guy who's a good shooter and this guy who's a good shooter. And I'm like, sure, but what about the other four guys you added who were, like, 42% and now are shooting 47? Like, how is this possible?
Right.
So I think it's probably steroids. I think that's the answer.
Definitely.
Nobody wants to say it, but so that's the only reason why they would be secretive about it, is it's super PEDs and HGH, and that's the only explanation, right?
What if it was like in Limitless, with like the drug that makes you smarter, only it just makes your like mental focus and muscle control?
I want some of that. I think I want that.
Yeah, we talked about this, Adam. They're supposed to just make you happy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Happy.
Yeah, so they're happier, and they shoot better. Mm-hmm. That's what happens. Yeah. On the Warriors' side, Stephen Curry was supposed to be hurt. He said his leg won't be 100% until, like, a month from now. And he played very well against the Kings, and he didn't show any ill effects. But we had this little debate on Twitter. Should the Warriors rest him? And risk losing the first seed to the Spurs.
No, because I don't think anything bad can happen to the Warriors. Like, I just don't think that that's a law of the universe anymore. Like, only good things happen. Like, they're playing Steph on a bad leg, and he goes for like 39-11-5. Like, it's just nothing bad happens to them. So I don't think there's any risk in it, because. Like, I said this last year, you know, everyone's worried about the basketball gods. Like, the Warriors are the basketball gods. So I don't know. Like, they have all of the mystical power, so I don't think there's any sort of concern. I mean, look, from an objective standpoint, yeah, I don't really get it. Like, I would have shut him down and just been like, why do we care? Like, we know we can get the number one. You know, even San Antonio has been great, but they do have few more losses than us, and we know that they're going to rest more guys than we are. You know, let's just go ahead and rest him. But, you know, I don't think there's any harm in letting him go because, like I said, there's just never any sort of negative consequence for the Warriors.
Do you think they can still get to 73 wins this year?
I do. I expect them to.
You expect them to?
Yeah, I expect them to. You know, they're ahead of pace. They can rest guys when they need to versus bad teams. We saw it, right? Like, they lost the one versus the Mavericks. That was a tough one. Like, Steph was hurt. But then they beat the Rockets, and then Curry went out versus the Nuggets and halfway through the game, and they still hung on to win that game. They can win, like, versus, you know, if they've got a game coming up against, not just to pick on the Lakers, I'm going to think of somebody else.
You can say the Lakers.
No, I know, but it's just too easy. and the Sixers are too easy too. I just need to, like, even Denver, like on Wednesday, they're playing the Nuggets on Wednesday. If Curry was just like, you know, it's still sore, and they were like, let's set you down and you can come back on Friday. Like, we won't want you healthy versus the Spurs and the Cavaliers. Okay, cool. Like, they could still beat the Nuggets without Curry. They could still beat the Timberwolves without Curry. Like, they could beat a bunch of these teams, and they can do that. And when he plays, they can rest Draymond or whoever else. So they've got a lot of versatility in what they want to be able to do. And on top of that, they want this. Like, they want to embarrass everybody. That's their entire mission, is to embarrass the entire NBA and to do something nobody else has done and to roll through everybody. So I think that they're definitely going to win 73. Not definitely. I won't say definitely. It's very hard. But I definitely think they're in a very good position to win 73.
If they stay healthy, they'll get to 73, basically.
I don't even know then. Like, you know, Barnes went down for a month and a half, and they were fine. If Draymond went down, would they be in trouble? Yeah. Mm-hmm. They'd be in a lot of trouble. Their defense hasn't been necessarily as good as it was last year.
Mm-hmm. Well, and trouble's relative.
Right.
Like, yeah, they're 35-2.
Like, if Draymond went down, what I'm saying is they would have a hard time. Depending on the matchup, it'd be difficult night after night to rattle off a bunch of wins. Like, if Draymond's out 6 weeks, yeah, that's going to probably tank their ability. But if they lose Bogut, they're fine. If they lose Iguodala, they're fine. If they lose Barnes again, they're okay. If they lose Clay, they're okay. The only guys that they can't lose for more than 2 weeks and win 73 games are Curry and Draymond. Those are the only two guys. And it's not because the rest of the guys don't matter. It's that everybody else is so good.
Warriors are 35-2. I remember the Bulls 96 going 41-3. And I thought that was really incredible. And the Warriors can beat that start.
We'll be right back with more Matt Moore from CBSSports.com after this outstanding break.
Hey everyone, I'm Matt Moore from CBSSports.com. Listen to Ray Ray's Fundamental as much as you can, as often as you can, because it's awesome, he's awesome, the NBA is awesome, and you are awesome. Have a great day.
Hey guys, Ray Ray here. Just want to remind you that you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can also download the show on Stitcher and also on RayRay.net. There is a hyphen in the middle of Ray Ray. This podcast is also being syndicated by the Happy Hour Network. As for Twitter, you can follow me at the No Look Pass, and you can follow my co-host Adam Jacoby at Adam_Jacoby, J-A-C-O-B-I. There is an underscore in the middle of Adam and Jacoby. And if you like more NBA, go to my site at thenolookpass.com, where I bring news, recaps, as well as features such as profiling obscure NBA players and evaluating old trades that have shaped the teams that they are today. So just remember, Ray Ray is fundamental, and you don't need a library card to check me out. Now back to the show.
So let's talk about the Nets, which I think they're pretty much doom and gloom right now because, okay, so they fired Lionel Hollins, they reassigned Billy King, they basically have no draft picks, first round picks for the next 3 years. What now for the Nets? Like, does this move even do anything?
No, and like Prokhorov came out today and said that their goal is for 2016 to come back and contend for a championship. And what that translates to is we're going to do something really stupid in free agency. Like, that's what they're going to do. He hasn't learned anything. He hasn't learned anything from this experience. And it's too bad for the fans. It's too bad for the franchise. It's too bad for the people who work for them. But that's where they're at. Is this guy thinks that you can just take shortcuts and spend, and it's not going to work. And they're going to continue to be terrible. They need a slow pace. patient rebuild in which they manufacture picks by trading off their good players, even for mid-first round or late first round guys, they need to be inventive with what they do, and instead they're just going to, I guess, put up a billboard of Kevin Durant outside Barclays and hope that he really says to himself, I want to live in Brooklyn.
They don't have a first round draft pick this year. They don't have a first round draft pick in 2018, and Boston has the right to swap first round draft picks in 2017. What all these deals, like, I don't know why they just mortgage the future for just, like, one or two shots at the playoffs, basically.
If you win a title, it's worth it, right? And I have a hard time blaming them because I thought that that Pierce, Garnett, Darren, Brooke, Joe Johnson team, I thought mm-hmm. they were going to win 62 games and be a serious challenger to the Heat in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I thought that team mm-hmm. was legit. So if you think that you have a chance to be there and make a run at a title, mm-hmm. I can't blame them for mortgaging the draft picks. It just didn't work out. The problem for them was it wasn't that deal. It was that deal plus the Atlanta deal. They'd already mortgaged their future to get Joe Johnson. And so, you know, you have to leave yourself out. And they never left themselves any outs. They've got no backup plan. They've got no, well, in case of emergency. They're mm-hmm. just this gigantic fountain of sadness sitting in a rust-covered toilet building that is dark and is really nice. Apparently, it's VR. I was in it. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful building, great Wi-Fi, wonderful community, but it is a fountain of sadness, and there is no hope there.
And we're not even including the trade that that when they traded for Gerald Wallace, and then they lost that first-round draft pick that turned out to be Damian Lillard.
Right.
And then they re-signed Wallace for like 4 years, $40 million.
They re-signed Wallace for 4 years, $40 million, and then they used him in the trade to Boston to get the old guys, and that's when they sent these picks.
Yeah,
it's incredible. It's incredible. I mean, it is an incredible model for how not to manage your assets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Adam, thoughts on the Nets?
There's nothing really I can say about them that hasn't already been said about.
Is there another franchise that's like them? Can you think of another franchise in sports that is this short-sighted?
Off the top of my head, the only really short-sighted franchises that I can think of are all in the NFL. I think the 49ers are screaming towards the bottom, although I don't think they've hit yet because they haven't really had to contend with the long-term ramifications of losing so many players. If you look at, it was Tim, I don't even know how to pronounce his last name, Tim Kiawn, he did a fantastic, sort of look inside the Dallas Cowboys, franchise and, you know, sort of Jerry Jones at the top. And it reads like one of those missives that you get from people who are embedded in a failing political campaign. You know, just dunces everywhere and yes men and, you know, these grand ideas that fall so spectacularly flat. And that's, I mean, I couldn't get rid of that vibe reading the Dallas Cowboys thing. And also, you know, I think the classic short-sighted franchise in the NFL, over the last 20 years was the Raiders. And just win, baby. And so that's what I think of. But none of them so completely mortgage their future like this. I mean, you can point to the Marlins too, but it worked for them. Like they have mm-hmm. two titles, despite having this skinflint of an owner. So at the very least, there's that. But that, I mean, this is rare territory the Nets are in right now, for sure.
I'm not sure if the Celtics really mortgaged their future when they tried to win the title in 2000, which they did in 2008, and they thought that was pretty much going to be like a 1-2 year thing, right, with Garnett, Pearson, Allen, mm-hmm. right? But it worked,
yeah.
And they actually made it last for like 4 or 5 years, really.
Yeah, and it's not like they didn't have an exit plan or an exit strategy in their business plan.
Yeah,
you know.
We're halfway through the season, and really quick, let's go through, I guess it's called the half-season awards, basically. So it's really no brainer who the MVP is right now, right? So let's skip that one. but most improved players so far, guys?
I think McCollum will get it. I actually think it should go to Jeremy Lamb. Because if I look at McCollum, you could look at McCollum and see, like, whenever, like, everyone said, like, well, you know, CJ McCollum could win most improved player. Well, if you're expecting him to, has he really improved that much? Or did you know he was good already? Like, I knew CJ McCollum was good out of college, and he's really good in the pros after a couple of years. Like, he's got an opportunity, and he's made the most of it. And I think CJ's a legit, like, scoring threat. Like, he's a major scoring threat. Lamb, on the other hand, you know, he was forgotten in Houston. He was under all this pressure in OKC. And failed, and then he goes to Charlotte, and everyone thinks his career's over, and instead, like, he's really stepped up, and he's become a very good two-way player, and he belongs in this league, and those are the kind of guys that I think should be in line for the award. I think Will Barton's probably also got to be on that list as well.
I was going to say, yeah, Will Barton, yeah. Yeah.
Like, he's shooting, like, 40% from three, and, like, he's the Nuggets' primary offensive weapon at times, which is just terrifying for that team. And you know, he brings relentless energy and aggression, and it really helps them. So Lamb and Barton are the two guys I look at as candidates.
I think you could make a case for even guys like Kawhi Leonard. Just diving into the improvement that he's made on the offensive end without sacrificing any of his defensive capabilities. You know, like he said, there's no aspect of offense that he's not good at anymore. You can't scheme him into situations where he's uncomfortable. And when you look at the, you know, things like offensive win shares, and I get that the people who vote for these things probably don't look at offensive win shares. I get it. But, I mean, he's on pace for something like 10 this year after 4 last year. And he, you know, led the league in defensive win shares last year too. So, it is a stunning leap, in overall effectiveness for him. So you could make that case. Now, I agree he won't get it, and I agree there's a type of player who wins an award like this, and it's usually not a first team all NBA player. But the case could be made from a strictly numerical vantage point.
Off the top of my head, like Draymond Green, he has 8 triple doubles this season. I didn't even realize that. Mm-hmm. Like, wow. That's an incredible feat at this time of the season, really. You know, didn't Westbrook have like what, 11 last season?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah,
and we're not even halfway through. He has 8 already.
Yeah, you can make a case for him too. But you know, once again, they don't normally take superstars for this. Even though, that's an awfully big leap, and I would say, and I get that there are a whole lot of people who would agree with me, but I would say that that is a more substantial leap than what you're getting out of, you know, your Will Bartons of the league. But that's just me.
Right. Well, the thing about most improved sometimes is, like, they just look at stats, and they don't even look at, like, the minutes that they play. Mm-hmm. It's like, CJ McCollum's getting minutes now, and, you know, of course they'll take a leap in scoring, right? That's how the award has been awarded the past few years even, right? So,
yeah.
Maybe they should just look at that, like, if who really, really improved on their game instead of just like the minutes of the guys getting opportunities now. So,
yeah.
Defensive Player of the Year is going to be really hard this year, isn't it? who's the best defensive player so far, you think?
It's Kawhi. You know, I just think I've talked to a bunch of guys around the league and good scorers, and I've asked them who's the toughest, and they say right now it's Kawhi. Just there's just nothing that he can do.
You can't even dribble around a guy.
No. His wingspan is 11 feet, so that's a problem.
I mean, yeah, he's one long plank of tentacles. It's just terrifying to play against. You know, and we'll see what happens when he plays Curry. If he even bothers Curry, if he even gives Curry a hard time, that's going to shut it down.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Rookie of the Year is between Porzingis and Towns right now, but I give it to Towns right now. What about you guys?
I think it's Towns. I don't think it's close. Like, I think KP's really good and very effective, and Knicks fans should be excited. But Towns is another level. Like, he's just a higher level. And I get that why Porzingis is so impressive, and he is. It's just, you know, to me, if he said one of these guys has to be the guy you're going to build around for the future based off of their performance this year, I'd be like, well, it's Towns. Like, Towns is an impact on the defensive end, offensively. He's a good passer. He's shooting the ball really well. He's versatile. Like, he's got range. He's got great moves inside. Everything. I mean, Towns is the guy, the kind, like, he's a model for the, like, a franchise guy you want to build around. He's been incredible. I think KP is awesome and is going to be a guy that Knicks fans love for many, 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 many years, but he doesn't necessarily need this award for that, and I think Towns is a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if they were handing out Rookie of the Year awards for, based off of, like, highlights and vines and all of that, then sure, Porzingis, but when you look at actual production, like Matt said, it's not close.
Mm-hmm. His putback dunks are awesome.
No, they're fun. They're so much fun.
Yeah, like the one last night.
3-6 Latvia, man. I'm all about it. Let's let that hype train roll. But you know, that's all it is at this point. Is hype. Which is
Tommy Beer had a really great nickname for him based off of his defensive prowess: the Madison Square Guardian.
Oh, I like it.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah,
I like that. Yeah, I'm down for that one. Best six man so far.
Barton.
Barton. Right.
I think, you know, Lamb gets MIP for me and Barton gets sixth man. As amazing as it is, I think Manu probably needs to go on the list for sixth man.
Oh, he's been really good
so far.
He's been
so good.
Yeah.
Iguodala doesn't want it, so I don't think you can put him on that list.
Yeah, you can't have somebody decline.
Right.
It's bad for business.
He said he would be insulted. He's like, it's fine, I'm coming off the bench. Like, that's okay, but no, I do not want six-man award. I think that there's a good chance Corey Joseph, who I thought had a really good start to the season, once everybody gets healthy, I think Corey Joseph is going to make a run at it, too. He's been very good for Toronto.
Yeah, Adam.
Yeah, I'm fine with Barton. That's fine.
Yeah, it's amazing how he was basically like, nobody in Portland, and then he goes to Denver. He basically gets a chance, and then boom, he's balling right now. So, who's done the most impressive job as coach so far? I guess outside of Luke Walton.
Well, yeah, Luke Walton did an amazing job of inheriting the Warriors.
Well, I'm just saying, like, you know, suddenly they're 35-2. Mm-hmm. Like, you just can't take that away from
them. No, well, you can, because his record as a coach is still 0-0.
That's
exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. I'll go to Steve Kerr.
I think, you know, Pop's in that conversation because of all the turnover. I think Carlisle deserves word for the Mavericks being 22-16 when I don't think that team is very good at all. Their schedule's been really balanced, but they beat teams they should, and there's credit for that.
What about Skiles?
They've had a rough month. They're on a little bit of a slide. I want to see what's going on with them for a while. I do think, however, Frank Vogel probably needs credit.
Yeah.
They have the third best defense with Jan Mahimi and Jordan Hill as their starting front court. Game over. Like that to me, I'm like, you know, you can win 30. You can break 73 wins, and I'm still more impressed by Vogel building a defense out of that team.
Adam, you got anything else?
Yeah, I mean, once again, Matt sort of covered the bases. I think Vogel needs something of a look here, but I think in college football, they give out Coach of the Year awards for guys who sort of beat expectations rather than actually do the best coaching job, which turns into situations where, you know, if you're coaching at Ohio State, you're never going to win the Coach of the Year because you're expected to win 11 games every year, and then you go ahead and do that. So so if the NBA wants to go down that road, I'm not sure it's the smartest thing to do, but I get why it happens. So if that's the way they want to go, then I think Vogel's a strong candidate. If you're just going to look at actually, you know, like, hey, this team's playing amazing basketball, and they're very well coached, then of course Popovich. Of course
that's like
Walton or Kerr.
Every season, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. And you could even, throw a little bone to Billy Donovan at OKC, although, their late game management is not ideal yet. So, and he's sort of walked into a, oh, hey, cool, I have Durant and Westbrook situation, and they're healthy. Wee. But you know, it's another situation where, you know, this is a team that's doing really well with a first year coach. So, but yeah, if I had a top three, it would be Kerr / Walton, Popovich, and Vogel in any order. I don't really think that there's a huge difference between the three.
Okay, guys, last basketball thing, biggest surprise so far.
The West is terrible. The West sucks. Mm-hmm. It's just no one is good. No one is good. The Pelicans are a complete joke. The Rockets are a complete joke defensively. The Grizzlies don't match up with anybody and can't hang with any of the contenders. The Lakers are terrible. The Wolves are terrible. Denver is in a real bind because Wilson Chandler's injury may have scuttled their season, which tells you about all you need to know about them. The Suns died. They just died.
Yeah, Adam, ever since we had the Suns social media guys on this podcast.
And they were very optimistic. Nobody saw, you know, just an utter disaster on the horizon, and that is totally
I love the way that they were playing early in the season. I thought they were
totally
a locked
right
playoff spot.
Yeah, they're so optimistic about beating the Warriors too. But yeah, no one's gonna beat the Warriors anyway. Yeah, the Thunder, the Clippers, what about them?
I'm not impressed. I'm just not. The Clippers are that director that keeps making the same movie and over and over and over again. It's Michael Mann. Like, oh, dark tones, out of focus light shots. Like, I just don't. I'm not impressed. I'm just simply not impressed with the Clippers. Like, you're going to have to prove it to me. You're going to have to make the Western Conference Finals in order for me to be impressed with you. And the Thunder, they'll give the Spurs a run in round two, but their defense is not nearly good enough. It's ranked 11th in the league, and it does not look like that on film. Like, it does not look good when you watch them play, at least not to a high enough degree. They have moments, but that Portland loss is a good example. If you can heat up, you could just tear them apart, and they just are not good enough defensively. And that's a big deal for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But what about the East? They have like a pile of over 500 teams in the playoff picture. Like, they have 9 teams over 500 at the moment. What about that?
Yeah, that's a surprise too. Maybe, well, no, probably not as surprising as the West collapse. But, you know, a lot of the East contenders, at the very least for, you know, that 6, 7, 8 position in the playoffs, you didn't really see coming this year. You know, Boston was actually one of them that you actually could sort of expect to be in the mix. But, they've held up surprisingly well, especially with a roster that still doesn't have a whole lot of people who would be, you know, starting on most NBA teams. You know, they've got a lot of guys who would be in anybody's rotation, but you know, the star power isn't there, but they've held up. The Knicks maybe it's a dead cat bounce, maybe not, but you know, they're in that mix after just a wretched year last year. The Pistons, the freaking Pistons are 21-16. So like they're a game away from the Heat and a game and a half away from the Hawks, the Pistons. So yeah, I think that the robustness of the East and really the you know, the lack of non Philadelphia or Brooklyn punching bags in the East, like it's those two and then that's it. Yeah, I didn't really see that coming. I thought that there would be more terrible basketball over there.
I am sad for the Hornets though. They lost 7 straight.
Well, that's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, they were number 2 at one time.
Mm-hmm. I think they're okay. I watched them last night. I think they're going to be mm-hmm. okay. When they get healthy, mm-hmm. I think they're going to turn it around. They need to get off of this West Coast road trip, and then you need to get back east and get healthy. I think they're going to struggle through January. I think they'll be all right in February, March, and April and get into a playoff spot.
But what about the Wizards, which I know Adam picked as like a dark horse to win the East, but wow, they don't look so good right now.
They're no fun, you know, and I feel bad because Randy Whitman did did what everyone wanted him to do, which is spread the floor, run, and open it and play small ball, and it's just, it's been terrible. So, I think that there's really, it shows you maybe, like, not every idea is a good idea. I think they've got some real work to do. They can turn it on. If they can rattle off, like, a 7-10-game win streak, they can get right back in it. They're not out of it by any means. But they got to figure out so much on the defensive end right now.
After all, so far, 2 through 12 are 6 games apart. So that's not so bad.
Yeah.
It's so packed under there right now. So, last thing, Matt, I've seen you make a couple Homestar Runner references in the past few years or so. So, what was your favorite thing about Homestar Runner?
The strong bad emails, just everything about them. I also like the techno beat one. The one that
yes, that was great.
I really like that one. I really liked the anime one where they did like the weird, really weird version of themselves.
I definitely could relate to that one.
That was very cool. I just like pretty much like my favorite strong bad line is, remember, a one that is not cold, or a cold one that is not cold is barely a one at all. That's my favorite favorite strong bad line.
Adam, do you know anything about Homestar Runner?
Nope.
Thanks for joining us, everyone.
I know, awesome, yeah.
Not part of my universe. That's all right. That's okay.
Hey, well, do you guys think the Jordan meme is funny?
Yes.
No.
I can't get enough of it. I'm sorry. I know there's so many people.
No, it's okay if you do. I don't mind. I don't mind anyone that thinks it's funny. I mind the idea that I have to think it's funny.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't require that everybody think the same things are funny that I do. That's not fun.
Right.
But I can't get enough of it. I'm sorry.
I think it was good for a week, and then it got super played out. So I'm just tired of it. It's like the whole thing where it's like, you know, everybody was saying Rick James bitch during the Chappelle show.
Yeah.
Like everybody was saying that, I got sick of it, you know. And the same thing when Kanye interrupted Taylor Swift, and everybody was saying that line, I got super sick of it after a week. So that's where I am.
It's hard to get excited when I'm like, when something happens, like there's an image on Twitter, and I'm like, well, somebody's gonna put the Jordan face on that, and then 5 minutes later, I was like, oh.
But there's more creativity to the way that people use the Jordan face than their uses of I'm Rick James bitch, you know, or I'll let you finish, like those sorts of things are really super pigeonholed in their possible uses.
Sure,
whereas
it is a versatile meme, I'll give you that.
Right, it's incredibly versatile. The one of him of his head rising where the Mets red apple is, like when they busted that out in the World Series, I mean, that killed me. And so, like, there's at least that. But I get why people, if you get, like, when once you get tired of something, you never get untired of it.
Right.
It just reinforces and avalanches into this just, like, cascading ball of hate that you have for the thing.
Well, I think I'm more, like, apathetic towards it than, like, really, really hate it, because at that point it's like, well, everyone's going to do it anyway, so I'm just like, okay, whatever. That's where I am.
I also follow 6,260 people, so, like, it the same things can get retweeted over and over and over again, and, like, there are just times when, it'll just so consistently pop up, I'm like, okay, again, and again, and again, and again.
Yeah, and I follow, like, not even 2,000 people, and I get sick of it, so I'm just kind of like, eh, okay, sure, it's another Jordan crying face thing, okay, cool, you know.
All right, fair enough, but I'm just saying you're never going to find me not retweeting it. I can't.
I mean, I have different humor myself. It's like, I never get tired of certain things myself, so whatever, you know, it's cool.
Yeah.
So, and I'm sure it's the same for Matt. All right, so, Matt, the usual, just plug your stuff, all that jazz and whatever.
You can check me out at TBS Sports. You can find me at HP Basketball if you absolutely must. Otherwise, you can find me at Matt Moore CPS. I have an official Facebook page I'm going to try and spend more time on. And RIP David Bowie.
Yeah. And yes. One last thing, and I didn't tell Ray Ray about this beforehand, but I probably would not have had a career in sports media if it weren't for Matt Moore and your direct involvement. No, dude.
Stop.
So And there are a whole lot of other people out there who can say the same thing.
Yeah, I said the same thing too. Like Matt's guided me over the years as well. So you know, yeah. we want to personally thank you for helping us in our careers.
Yeah.
You're talented people, and that's all the like. You just talented people should get more opportunities. Like that's just flat out what it is. It's like,
yeah. Well,
that's true. Like I've been reading Adam for years and years and years and years and years and years. So like, you know, I'm just. And I've known Ray forever and ever and ever.
Yeah.
So it's just like, yeah. You know, I just want talented people to have opportunities to do what they do well.
Well, thank you. Sincerely, from the bottom of my heart.
Yeah, thank you. Well, that got sappy really quick.
Yeah, I guess I don't feel right. I gotta like, make fun of some people on Twitter now. I gotta
go for it.
Yeah, go for it. So we should end it here. Hey, do you remember that Ninja Turtles line that Ben said, Adam? What was it again?
Oh, I forgot already. No.
Something about Ninja Turtle, hugging, oh man, I can't even remember it anymore. Yeah, that line. Anyway, you should remember that for next time, Adam.
Strong finish, guys. Strong.
Yeah. Really Yay. Strong finish. Go make fun of people on Twitter right now.
Thanks, guys.
We're done. Thanks.
This is Jamie Nagio from TWC Sportsnet, and you're listening to the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast.
Doom, 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 doom.
It's Girl Talk with the Gal Pal Squad.
This is Girl Talk with the Gal Pal Squad, first of the year. I am here with one of my favorites, Joanne. What's up?
Happy New Year, Ray Ray.
Happy New Year. Yeah, so, as of late, the lottery jackpot has been growing and growing and growing to the point where you can win a billion dollars this Wednesday. $1 billion.
Like, everybody's talking about the Powerball.
Yes, exactly. In 44 states, and California's included, Michigan's included. So, yeah. Are you going to buy a ticket?
Well, we bought one on Saturday when it was, what, $900 million
mm-hmm.
with the jackpot. And so Mike was headed up to the gas station, and I said, oh, are you going to buy one? And I was thinking mm-hmm. he was just going to buy one. He ended up buying $20 worth.
Whoa. Yeah.
That's not what I would have. I was thinking, like, you know, literally just one, you know, for $2. Well, that's about all I want to put into it.
Yeah, well, see, the lottery's there on my mind. It's like, I was like, okay, I'm going to go buy a ticket for Saturday's jackpot, and I didn't do it because I just didn't think about it, you know? So, but now it's consciously in my mind. I was like, maybe I should get one just to be a chance to be a billionaire, or after taxes, almost billionaire. But
yeah,
here's the thing. What do we do if we win this? Like, pretend one of us wins it. Like, what do we do? How are we going to handle this?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, have people thought about that? It's like, oh, I'm going to win $1 billion. What am I going to do now, you know? And
yeah, my mind just goes in so many directions, you know, the responsible direction, the charitable one, and then just, you know, silly, crazy, fun ideas.
And because
well,
I got so curious.
If I won...
Mm-hmm.
First off, let me just get this out of the way. I would buy a car for the poor Pistons dancing usher. His car was stolen.
Oh,
so for those who don't know,
yikes.
The Palace of Auburn Hills, where the Pistons play, we have a dancing usher, and he's very entertaining, just the nicest guy. Mm-hmm. He tweeted out yesterday that his car was stolen. He doesn't even know if he'll be able to make it to the Pistons San Antonio game tonight.
Yikes.
That poor guy. If I won the money, I would set him up with a brand new car.
Mm-hmm. That's the first thing you thought of, huh? Well,
see, like, I actually looked into this because it's like, okay, what to do if you win $1 billion or if you win the lottery in general, right? And I ended up reading, like, a bunch of horror stories about the lottery, where the lottery winners, where, you know, they blow, like, all $25 million in, like, a few years or whatever, you know? And I'm like, yeah. I don't want to be that guy, you know? So, you know, and apparently you can take your time about, you know, announcing yourself as the winner. Like, you have, like, 180 days or whatever to claim that you're the winner. So, you don't have to claim it immediately.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
you
know,
wanting to wait.
Well, yeah, but at the same time, it's like, you know, you don't want
to. You
don't
want a jackpot of that size. You want the chance at anonymity.
Yeah. Yeah. And apparently,
like, that I would be the responsible jackpot winner that wouldn't go broke. Like, the thing. I'd be that way.
I'd also like to think that I'm the responsible winner where I wouldn't share my winnings on Facebook. I'm like, hey, guess what, guys? I won the lottery. Share on Facebook. Or I tweet it out or something like that. Like, I wouldn't think I would be that guy because I know some people are dumb enough to do that. Right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Like, I wouldn't know what to do with $1 billion. It's like, I guess, yeah, I guess I would disappear. Like, you will never see me ever again. or I could keep this, like, a secret for, like, my entire life. It's like, I don't know how hard that would be to do. But, you know, like, it's like, you know, I don't want to be comparative or whatever. But, like, you know, if you're a gay person hiding your homosexuality for your entire life, that's how it feels like, right?
I don't know. I wasn't expecting that analogy.
I don't know. Like, you have to hide it, right? Or something. Like, unless it's so obvious. It's like, oh, Ray just bought a house in Beverly Hills. What's going on here? Right?
I mean, because, yeah, from certain standpoint, you need to protect yourself, you know, from people who just want to take advantage of you. I mean, I guess that's a good thing about, like, winning a lottery is that, you know, to some extent you would already know who your true friends are. You know, the ones who liked you before you had any money. But
yeah.
But then from there on out, you would have to, for anyone who knew, you would have to, you know, be leery of anybody you met. You know, is this person really interested in being my friend? And then you just here for the money.
Mm-hmm.
Or,
yeah.
You know, people trying to scam you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and it's hard to keep yourself anonymous at this. Can you keep yourself anonymous? Like, even if the jackpot is this big, I don't think you can, really. You know, it's like, everybody wants to know who the billionaire is.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I don't know. It's really tough. Like, I think it would have more problems if you win the lottery, right?
I mean, because I would have this inclination, you know, I would want to pay off, you know, all my family's bills and debts. But where does it end, you know?
Yeah.
And then, want to pay for my friend's student loans, and at some point you'd have to draw the line. Somebody just run out of money. And
yeah, although it would be, I'm sure it'd be pretty tough to, like, spend, like, $1 billion in, like, 4 or 5 years, right? Yeah, but I don't know. So I guess I'll buy a ticket. I guess. Like, what? I don't gamble at all. Like, I go to Vegas every summer. I might have gambled once, like in the last 6 years. Wow, I've been going for that long now. but you know, and the lottery I might have played only like once in my entire life because I'm just not into it, you know. And I know people are addicted to that sort of thing.
I'm not much of a gambler, but when I do, I'm like a senior citizen. I like the slot machines. I like bingo. And if I'm going to play the lottery, I'd rather have a scratch ticket because it's something fun.
Right.
So at least like 5 minutes of entertainment. But yeah, other than that, I don't really get too big into gambling. And if I'm going to do a slot machine, I usually, you know, I have a set amount of money. Like, you know, I'm going to play with maybe $20 of quarters. And when I'm done, I'm done.
I'll just say this to wrap it up. Joanne, I love you dearly. You're one of my best friends ever. But I will not tell you if I win the lottery.
That's cool.
Yeah,
you can't completely disappear. You've got to keep texting song lyrics from time to time.
Well, yeah, I guess I can do that instead of like just disappearing entirely, because by then it would be obvious what happened, right? I mean, knock on wood. God, like I hope disappearing completely means like you win the lottery, not like, you know, getting, you know, I don't even want to think about it, but you know.
Yeah.
I guess I'll let you borrow $5. How's that?
That's fair.
Okay. Good enough. Thanks, Joanne.
I like the fact that you have a friend, Ray Ray.
Yeah, everybody should have a Ray
Ray. We should. I'm gonna solicit a Ray Ray to befriend.
Game over, yeah! Moded.